welcome everyone to iloverealestate.tv. Great to have you guys on board. I'm going to talk about a very important topic that could potentially save you, come make you, thousands upon thousands of dollars. It's a topic that most people forget, unfortunately. Most people don't want to know about. Well, they think they do, but they go, oh my God, that's too hard. But it's actually not. And it's also something that I don't care, how much you're into real estate or not, or in fact, any business, anything to do with, income, expenses, etc. You've got to know about tax. Tax is the word, guys, and it's something that, honestly, you're the one who signs your tax returns. You're the one who's responsible. There is not an accountant, there is not a financial planner, there is not a lawyer in the world that's going to be thinking as much about your situation and your future and your particular taxation implications as much as you are over tea and toast on a Sunday morning. So unfortunately, it's one of those topics that you just kind of have to become an expert in the areas that affect you. Not every area, obviously. But when it comes to property, if you're in the property game, you need to become an absolute expert on the taxes that affect property investors and people in the business of real estate. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to become an accountant or a fringe benefits tax specialist. God, I'm not even a fringe benefits tax specialist. I hate fringe benefits tax. But anyway, let's talk about the most forgotten tax deductions, because this is where I find that people really lose money, and they lose money consistently just because they don't know. And I'm afraid ignorance doesn't save you in the court of law, and the golden rule with the tax office is, well, if you can't prove it, you can't claim it. So let's know what we've got to prove. Now, to help me out again, I have my great friend here, Tash from Grow Accounting. Hey, Tash.
Hello, how are you?
Very good. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Now, let's talk about some of these most forgotten tax deductions. One of the ones that I'd like to start with is actually borrowing expenses. Let's start with how a borrowing expense can be claimed.
Okay, so borrowing expenses can't be claimed in the beginning year, basically. You have to write them off over 5 years. So you get to claim 20% of them each year, and if you don't have it for the full year, you have to prorata it over 6 months if you've only had that borrowing cost, in December. So
what is a borrowing expense? What constitutes a borrowing expense?
Yeah, so there are all those fees at the start that the banks like to charge you in getting a loan. So they could be registrations of mortgage, they can be mortgage insurance, they call them lots and lots of different varied things, basically, but it's normally that big clump of fees on the very first statement you see.
Okay, and I mean, those big clump of fees in the first statement, some of them actually don't even appear there. Things like mortgage insurance, that kind of gets hidden in amongst the loan and often just gets capitalised into the loan. This is where I think, a lot of accountants who are not used to doing property investors as clients in their tax returns, they miss this because there's a lot of fees that get capitalised into the loan that you kind of don't see necessarily unless you really go chasing for it.
That's right. And it's probably something that people don't really provide when they come to get their tax return or their initial loan
documents.
They'll give you your loan statements, but not necessarily the loan agreements and what fees are applicable in that loan.
That's right. And often, the information flow just isn't there because, you're saying, okay, you bought this property at such and such a time, but how much was it and all of those little nitty-gritty things that are included in the settlement statements, often clients don't even bring that along, do they?
No, they don't. They'll just say, oh, well, I bought this property and it was, $420,000. But that might be the contract price. Mm. But normally there's a lot of adjustments for rates that need to be paid and water and also body corporate in some cases. So all sorts of little adjustments on that settlement statement, which you can actually claim in your tax return. But you need to take that along when you get your tax done.
Let's just go through a little mini example here of the difference in taking all this stuff up actually means. Let's use your example of, you know, we bought a property for $420,000. Let's make it 400. Figures are easier.
Okay.
$400,000, we'll say. So the mortgage insurance on, say, $400,000, if they're borrowing 90% as an example, would come in around about $6,400, roughly.
Yes.
Okay? So how do we claim that $6,400? How does that work?
Okay, so that we can claim over 5 years. So each year we can claim around $1,300.
Okay, now if that's missed, which I'm telling you now, I would say, well, greater than 60%, I reckon, gets missed by accountants in these borrowing expenses area.
Excellent.
So if it's $1,300 in the first year, that's, even if they're only paying 30 cents in the dollar, or, you know, equivalent to a company, you know, that's nearly $400 every year that they're missing out in real dollars. That's not tax deduction, that's real tax money that they're paying or wasting, really, simply by not picking up mortgage insurance on something like that.
Absolutely. And in, I guess, in accountant's defense, you know, a lot of people just provide an interest figure to us.
That's right.
So we don't even know what's happening with the loans, which probably then leads into refinancing costs as well.
Well, that's right. And also bank fees along the way. I mean, a lot of these loans, they actually have an annual charge, and that gets missed.
Yeah, because often it doesn't actually go into that loan account. It might come out of a completely separate account altogether.
So. Correct. Yeah, so, you know, it's not just one account that you've actually got to provide there. So what should the client bring along?
The loan statements, and if it's been purchased in that year or refinanced in that year, then the loan agreements as well.
And you keep a copy of those on your files as well?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. So the loan agreements, the loan statements, the settlement statement from the lawyer.
Yes.
To pick up all of the adjustments for rates and insurance and all of those other bits and pieces.
Also, the contract is important because we need to know the contract date, basically, because we go by the contract date, or the ATO goes by the contract date, not by the settlement date. So if you have a contract on the 15th of June, and it doesn't settle to the 15th of July the next tax year, the ATO actually regards that as the 15th of June, not the 15th of July.
And that's important for selling a property too.
Absolutely.
Because you might think, oh, well, it doesn't settle till July, so I'm on a lower tax bracket next year, it'll be better for capital gains tax. And in actual fact, it's when you sign the contract, not when you actually settle on the property.
That's right, and we can't always assume it's just a standard 1 month contract. We actually need to see that.
Correct. And on top of that, if that's the case and you are trying to push the contract date into the next financial year, the document you should be using to do that is not actually a contract. It's an option with the contract attached, dated 1st, 2nd of July, something like that, because it pushes the actual contract date into the next year. But it still secures the buy-sell arrangement. So it's just a different piece of paper that you've got to be using to do that kind of stuff. All right, so over the 5 years, that would be, say, $6,400 that people could quite easily have missed out. Plus, you know, on average, those loan establishment fees are anywhere between about $250 to $1,000.
Yes. Yep.
Gets missed. And sometimes it's, you know, $400 or $500 every year that gets missed as a fee as well. And on top of that, when a property is actually refinanced, because this is happening more and more, you know, you go from one bank to another, or you even just refinance even in the same bank to a different style of loan or access some extra equity and it becomes a new loan, what happens then is that the unclaimed borrowing expenses that you haven't claimed so far. Because remember, on our $400,000 example, we had $6,400 as our mortgage insurance. Probably another couple of grand and other bits and pieces we would have been able to find through the accounts. So let's call it $8,000 all up.
Yep.
Okay. So $8,000 over 5 years is what, $1,600?
Yes.
So $1,600, you know, if your tax rate was you know, close to the 50 cents in the dollar, 48 what and a half, or whatever it is, it's 47 and a half, you know, that's going to be close to $800 difference to you.
Yep.
And even at the 30%, it's still going to make massive difference. You know, $500 thereabouts extra money in your pocket simply for getting all of that stuff picked up. But let's continue with this example. Let's say after year two,
yep,
we refinance.
Yep.
So we've claimed $1,600 each year, we'll say. So we're up to 3,200. There's another 4,800 that can actually be claimed in that year as a tax deduction, plus the 1/5 proportionately of whatever the next refinancing costs are. So, you know, 4,800, if it was, you know, you're close to 50 cents in the dollar, you know, we're around about the, I will say 4,200, but take it back to 47.5, we're around the $2,000 that you haven't claimed in that year. And even if you were at a 30 cents in the dollar tax bracket, you know, that's $1,600 that you haven't claimed, which is absolutely ridiculous.
And the ATO are never going to come and say, by the way, you've forgot to claim these deductions.
I don't think so.
No.
All right. So borrowing expenses, big biggie there that is that people miss all the time. We talk about the settlement statements and picking up all the bits off there, your rates adjustments, that kind of thing. Now, something else that I always advise, regardless of whether it's a new property or a second-hand property, an older property that you're buying, not a brand new one, is to get a quantity surveyor's report. Do you want to explain exactly what that is and how it works?
Yep. So a quantity surveyor's report looks at how much it would cost to build that building and what the fixture and fittings are in it. And basically, for the cost of the building, you get a 2.5% deduction. And then the fixture and fittings, depending on what rate, you might get 20%. Now, it's a quantity surveyor that has to provide this report. Unless you've actually built this building yourself and have the actual invoices, you can't have a best case guesstimate, basically. You need to get a quantity surveyor. The accountants can't do it. So a quantity surveyor's report will cost you anywhere from about $300 to $800. It just depends what area you're in. And that cost of having the report done is deductible in the year you have it done.
Absolutely important. Now, there's a lot of difference in the quantity surveyor's reports too. Some of them are, you know, one pages and some of them are quite detailed. What's your take on that?
I guess I probably like the more detailed ones. The more detailed ones will actually give you different methods to claim. You can have just flat rates or you can have things in low value pools, and these all have different amounts of deductions. And normally the more detailed reports will actually give you the option of you can claim it this way or you can claim it another way. Right, whereas the one-page report is very, very skinny on detail, and the ATO are actually looking at these reports, and I'm not sure if you gave them a one-page report whether they would be satisfied that you had enough information to actually be making that claim.
And make sure your quantity surveyor actually goes to the property and has a good look, doesn't just do a standard printout, you know, press print off word processor.
Definitely.
Now, with the quantity surveyor's report, obviously there's a little bit of time requirement there to get the person out, to do the report, all the rest of it. So please make sure you've done all of that kind of stuff beforehand, that you've allowed enough time to get the figures into the accountant to go through and put in your return and all that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. If you can, as I said, the cost of that report is deductible. So if you can do it before the end of the financial year rather than wait till you're getting your tax done and then the accountant asks you for it, you've got that claim in the current financial year.
Yeah, that's right. What about travel, going and having a look at properties? What's the go there? Because I always get asked, I went up to have a look at this property and I had airfares and accommodation and whatever else that are pre-purchase expenses. What's the go with them?
Yeah, so with travel expenses, I guess the most important thing here and what the ATO really, really looks at is was this the predominant use of why you were taking that trip? And is it fair and reasonable? So, you know, if you're flying to the Sunshine Coast to have a look at your investment property and it just happens to be the middle of school holidays and you then stay for another 2 weeks, the ATO will actually say, well, we actually think the predominant purpose for that was for you to go on holiday. And they most likely will squash all of the claim except for maybe some travel or on the actual day to go and look at the property. So, you know, they don't seem to have an issue if you stay just a couple of days, but really when you start staying an extended period of time, you really lose on that deduction.
That's obviously once you own the property.
Yes.
So all of, you know, going and having a look at it once you own the property, once a year would be all right. And you'd really need to be doing repairs or something if you're going to look at it a little bit more than that. Agree?
Absolutely. Or, you know, just ask if your real estate's going in every 3 or 6 months, if you can just accompany them every time they do an inspection as well. And they can then write you a letter saying that you were there at the same time.
Just to check out, you know, what needs to be done and what needs to be updated, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But pre-purchase expenses, before you actually buy it, what's the story with them?
They're not claimable.
In any shape or form?
No, not at all.
Right. So what do we do with them? Just wasted money?
They're added to your capital base. So if they're done once the contract's signed, if you're only having a look and there's no contract signed, then the ATO says they've actually been incurred too soon before the property's been even purchased and they really are lost. Unless, of course, you're in the business of real estate investing.
Which would mean you'd have to be active and doing, and then your income is treated as, well, your profit is treated as income, not capital.
That's right.
And obviously with capital you get 50% exemption if you own it for more than 12 months and all that sort of thing. Whereas if you're in the business of real estate, whilst those expenses might be deductible, the income, you don't get the 50% exemption for owning something for more than 12 months. Everything's treated as just standard income.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the office expenses and, you know, bits and pieces that you ring up the agent and follow this up and post a letter here and those sort of things. What can really be claimed there?
Yeah, so with the telephone, we normally claim either you record how many phone calls you've made for the year, or if you're calling off your mobile, unless you're calling the property manager all the time, you're really going to have minimal claims here. So you might be better off just claiming the actual, you know, 25 cents per call, or if it's from your mobile. You can claim postage. And I guess it's one of those things that people say, oh, well, you know, I'm only getting sort of $50 or less. You know, should I even bother? But, you know, if you own that property for 10, 20 years, it all adds up. And even, you know, $50 at your 30% rate, you know, that I'd rather that $15 in my pocket than the tax man's. So
absolutely.
Really all it takes is just, you know, a few seconds to record those calls and the postage stamps that you've spent the money on.
One of the things that I get asked all the time, and really comes back, I guess, to the depreciation and quantity surveyors reports is, what if we do a renovation on the property? And we might put in a new kitchen, you know, a few floor coverings, bits and pieces. And we've actually got the receipts for them. Should we claim the receipts, or should we get a quantity surveyor in to say, well, what should it have cost?
I guess that comes down to how well did you do the renovation yourself? You know, did you buy them at really, really good trade prices? Or, you know, if you'd actually paid someone to do that, it probably would have cost you a bit more, and therefore the quantity surveyor's report will probably give you a higher depreciation than.
So what's the case there? I lost the receipts?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
They got lost. They are the ones that went black in the car.
Yeah.
Okay, so sometimes it's a better situation to actually get a quantity surveyor's report in once you've done all of the repairs and bits and pieces on the property, rather than try and keep this receipt and that receipt and whatever else. And one's as good as the other?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Another confusing topic that I, again, get asked all the time is, you know, what's a repair and what's a capital expenditure? Let's first of all explain how they're treated as a capital item versus an expense, so a repair.
Yeah, so a repair is an immediate claim. So if you've spent $1,000 on a repair, you get that as an immediate deduction. Whereas a capital improvement comes back to depreciation, and maybe you can only claim 20% of that on ongoing years. So there's a massive difference in the way they're claimed. It's probably the area the ATO looks at the most with rental properties as well. I think there's been many years of people claiming everything as repairs when they shouldn't have, and the ATO's a bit cranky. They've been handing out that tax money and are really starting to look at that area.
Okay, so when we're talking about a capital item that then, like a kitchen, we'll say,
yep.
New kitchen goes in, it's a capital item, clearly. It's not a repair, it's a capital item. That can then be depreciated over a number of years.
Yes.
So you might get, you know, 20% of it or something or other each year until it's fully depreciated. Well, actually, it wouldn't be 2.5%, wouldn't it?
Yes.
On a kitchen. 2.5%. So basically, over 40 years, you get depreciated down to nothing. But what happens with depreciation is at the end of the ownership of that property, it all gets added back. So it's kind of a double whammy when we talk about depreciation versus a repair, because if it gets classified as a capital item and therefore depreciated, for starters, you can only claim it over a period of time. Now, if it's an item like a dishwasher, then it might be 20%, so you claim it over 5 years.
Yes.
Whereas if it's a new kitchen, cupboards and whatever else, it's probably 2.5%, which means you claim it over 40 years.
Yes.
But at the end of that period, let's say when we sell that property or halfway through or whenever that might happen, whatever you've claimed actually increases, it gets added back and it increases your capital gain at the other end.
Yeah, the ATO say basically, well, we've given you the benefit of making that claim every single year, but we've got to add that back to the cost base, otherwise you're going to get that twice, basically, is the way they view it. So
if we can claim it as a repair, then we get the tax deduction in that year and there's no clawback later on.
No, there's not.
So it's actually a double whammy advantage to be a repair, not a capital item.
It is. A little bit harder to make things repairs sometimes. So
let's talk about that. What are the distinguishing factors?
Yep, so the ATO has a really, really narrow view of this. And they will say something is a replacement if you don't replace it with what was already there. So say you have a vinyl floor and you want to rip that lino up and you want to put tiles down because, you know, it's really more functional for that area and might add more value. But they say, nope, you haven't replaced that flooring with exactly what was already there, and they'll regard that as a replacement straight away. There'll also be things...
Hang on. How do they know? How do they know whether it was lino or whether it was tiles?
I guess they don't unless you get an audit.
Yeah, but how do they know then? How do they know what you threw out of the tip?
Yeah, I guess you wouldn't want that detailed very well on those invoices. So.
Or your quantity surveyor's report, I guess, in the first place.
Yes, yeah.
Interesting.
And they look at things like fences. So if you have a section of your fence falling down, it was paling wood and you want to put a colour bond steel fence up in the place, they'll say that's a replacement automatically. Whereas if you just replace that little section with palings again, then that's a repair.
Things like that, anything external, I mean, there's things like near maps and that sort of thing, websites that can actually go, you know, they'll date, this was the fence on such and such a date and that was the fence on another date and therefore, you know, it was clearly a difference, therefore it's provable.
Yeah.
Anything inside is a little bit hard to prove.
It is, absolutely. So I guess that would depend on, once again, how detailed are your records. You know, if you're presenting them with your purchase information and it's got pictures of what the property looked like when you purchased it and now there's tiles on the floor, then that they become aware at that point too. So
they could also, I'm just thinking from an audit perspective, you know, you can do website dating and things like that where, I don't know, but realestate.com could probably be website dated. So what were the pictures on the internet when you purchased it?
Yeah.
Quite likely now.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's lots of avenues that, you know, tax office is obviously far more techie than I am over these things with their audits, but there are those types of things that can clearly be tracked.
Absolutely, and they are allowed to talk to third parties, so they are allowed to talk to the people who did the tiling, or they can talk to your tenants, so their powers are quite broad. I mean, I don't think they'd normally go to all that effort, but, you know, they absolutely can if they want to.
Yeah, I mean, the tax office, you don't muck around with it, I can tell you now. The tax office has very wide-reaching audit capabilities and, you know, if they want to, they can take it to the nth degree.
Absolutely. I actually was talking to an ATO person last week who they've just prosecuted a lady who didn't declare her cash income that she paid her children's lunches with. And they actually required the records from the tuck shop at the school to prove that that money was cash money that she was generating in her business that they didn't know about and wasn't declared. So
really?
Yes. So, you know, sometimes they do get a bee in their bonnet and decide to go after you. So
Wow.
Yeah.
So they would have to prove that she didn't have enough money to live on.
Yeah.
To pay the tuck shop monies, etc.
Yeah, that's right.
Gee.
Yeah.
That's forensic accounting taken to the nth degree, isn't it? I'm talking about forensic accounting. Travel to go and look at properties and things like that. Let's say you live in Brisbane and you've got a rental property in Cairns.
Yeah.
You know, you can obviously fly up there. Well, that's pretty easy to keep the records for. But what if we drive up? What do we have to do to keep receipts there, or prove, or logbook, or what do we do?
Yeah, I'd certainly, a logbook would be the start. Once again, I would get the real estate to confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you've taken time off work, I'd have, you know, your leave record showing that you've asked for 3 or 4 days off because you actually have to drive there. You could provide the receipts of the service stations along the way where you've had to fill up. So just painting them that picture of that was what your journey was.
And what it was for, etc.
Yeah.
Yeah. And logbooks, while we're on this topic, and this really applies not only to property but to work-related expenses and everything, they can actually do carbon testing on them now to determine when you wrote them out. So you really do need to be doing your logbooks real-time, you know, for the full 12 weeks. But once you've done that, obviously they're good for, what, 5 years now?
Yeah, they are. So unless your use materially changes, you can leave that logbook for 5 years. Even if your car changes, you can still use that same logbook if your use hasn't changed.
And they've got some really techie apps these days that can do it all online.
They do. So I use one called Travel Logs on my iPhone. It's a little bit more expensive in the app world. I think it's
$5.99. Wow, that's expensive.
I know.
I think in the old-fashioned logbook from the post office is $14.
Yeah. So with that, it's a GPS tracker. So instead of having to write down what your odometer reading was at the start and what it was at the end, you just basically click start and it will GPS track how many kilometres you've done. You press stop and you say, well, this was for business or private use. So,
just as a word of warning, guys, because this has just happened to me this month, please back up your iPhones or your Androids or whatever you've got onto your computers, because, and back up your computers as well, because I've just had my iPhone cark itself. And the last time I backed it up was 12 months ago, so had I done a logbook in the last 12 months, it would have been Cactus.
Yes.
No good at all. So please back them up. And just while we're on substantiation, I mean, I know I've said this before, but the tax office, as I said, if you can't prove it, you can't claim it. And the requirement is that it has to be in English and legible. But that doesn't mean that it has to be a piece of paper. A digital version of whatever is good enough.
It is. So you can take pictures on your iPhone, you can scan them as well, so you can have those digital records. That is not a problem for the ATO.
And back them up.
Yes. And it must be in English as well. So, yeah.
And you can actually use, obviously, the iCloud thingies where you can back them up to the internet effectively.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You can see I'm really techie.
Yeah.
I rely on some of my younger students to keep me up to date on that stuff. Okay, Tash, well, thank you so much for coming on and helping everybody out on a few of those things. I think, you know, there's a lot there that people do miss, and really it means thousands and thousands of dollars to them. So I hope that's helped, guys, and remember to stay on top of this tax stuff. It's not something you want to let go for too long. You know, what do you do if someone comes in and they've got, you know, 8 years of tax returns to do?
Yeah, well,
send them away.
No, and you'd be surprised how often that happens, actually.
Yeah.
We probably get one or two or three of those a month.
Wow.
Where they haven't, we've got a couple at the moment that haven't done them for 14 years. They moved to Australia from South Africa and have never completed a tax return. And it's a business, and they're being GST registered, so you can only...
The tax office must be pounding down their door.
You can only imagine the kind of pain they're in, but, you know, you're going to miss deductions. If you're not on top of it, you'll forget to claim things, and at the end of the day, as I said, I'd rather the money in my pocket. So.
Absolutely.
And I guess don't be afraid to ask, because people often say to me, oh, you know, I think this is a stupid question, but... You don't know unless you ask.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not your industry, so don't be afraid to ask it. You know, I'm sure I'd ask lots of stupid questions to hairdressers or Bobcat drivers as well, so don't be afraid just to ask the question.
Absolutely. So how do we get into contact with you, Tash?
If you visit my website, which is growaccounting.com.au, and all of our contact details are on there.
Very good. Well, thanks, Tash, for coming along and sharing all your wisdom again.
Not a problem. Thank you.
Okay. Bye for now. Catch you again on www.iloverealestate.tv, and I'll be back again in a couple of weeks to talk to you again. Bye for now.